That's pretty much the story of the first silicon transistor,
mm-hmm.
but one that I think
TI did go on.
They did not use rate growing techniques, as I understand it. I think they used the double doping techniques, and finally got enough control so that they could make some silicon mm-hmm. transistors, pull out thin junctions. They never published anything on their technique, as far as I know. And I think they did sell some, but I think just to the military. That's merely prelude.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, we were working on another technique that looked like it would be much more promising if we could make it work, and that was using diffusion.
Diffusion, yes.
Because that was a much more controllable process.
Mm-hmm.
We were also helped by the fact that just around that time, another metallurgist at Bell Labs named Henry Thoyer developed the floating zone technique. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that crystals that were grown, silicon crystals that were grown by floating zone, did not show this conversion on heating effect. We didn't know why at that time. As it turned out within the next year or so, a physicist at Bell Labs, Wolfgang Kaiser, his last name was Kaiser, did some simply beautiful work that showed that the defect was simply dissolved oxygen in silicon. And by heating and cooling it, you could either make the oxygen dissolve or precipitate.
Mm-hmm.
And by looking through the crystal with infrared, you could actually see these precipitates forming. And it became clear that the problem here was that going in a silica crucible, that oxygen was being reduced, and some silicon dioxide was
being reduced, and the oxygen was dissolving in the silicon. And in the
floating zone technique, there was no crucible. So that simplified life
mm-hmm.
life quite a bit. You could not rate grow nearly as well in the floating zone technique as you could in the pulling technique. The mass that you had melted was not large enough, and you were always fighting the stability of that zone.
Mm-hmm.
It grew too big, surface tension wouldn't be strong enough to keep the molten zone in place. But it was a perfect material for the diffusion process.
Mm-hmm.
And another chemist in the chemical physics department, Cal Fuller, had measured, Jim Struthers had measured diffusion coefficients of impurities in germanium. And they were in the process of measuring the diffusion coefficients in silicon. Out of that work came the knowledge that acceptor impurities diffuse more rapidly than donor impurities. Mm-hmm. And so you could do a simultaneous diffusion of both phosphorus and trying to think of which of the I think it was gallium. Aluminum. Well, at any rate, an impurity and a donor that you where you make in the gas phase pass over the silicon mm-hmm. at high temperature, and you get and if you started with n-type silicon, the donor would diffuse in faster than the antimony. And would overcompensate the n-type silicon, so you get an NPN
mm-hmm.
Structure. And he could, you get an NPN structure. No, it must be the other way around. It must be a PNP structure. Yeah, because we used aluminum it must be a PNP structure, that the antimony would diffuse more rapidly than the aluminum. Right. And he could control the thickness of those layers. They would be very uniform and could be mm-hmm. controlled to within a tenth of a micron.